and welcome to this 53rd episode of the I Ching with Clarity podcast. This is a listener's reading, Nathaniel's, and it's a bit meta, I suppose, since his question was about how best to approach the I Ching. Yi's answer was hexagram 26, great taming or great tending, changing at line 1 to 18, corruption. And this is actually why he booked a chat, because he'd just been listening to the episode from last November, when we were talking about 18 in the context of family constellations work. Anyway, you'll hear him mention that, and if you want to revisit that episode, you can find it at onlineclarity.co.uk/49. That's onlineclarity.co.uk/49. If this episode somehow inspires you to share a reading on the podcast, you'd be very, very welcome to do so. Just visit onlineclarity.co.uk/share, S-H-A-R-E, and book yourself a slot. And now here's the reading. Nathaniel, thank you for bringing a reading.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, about how to approach I Ching use. You said when you wrote to me that you'd been dabbling for years and had decided to dive deep.
And this is where the question, it seems like almost like a trite, simple question, but I've been dancing back and forth with the I Ching for about 40 years. I first discovered a paperback. I have no idea whose translation it was or anything like that, in my parents' attic. I was 17. I'm now in my 50s. And it really attracted me. It seemed like something, I could really get into. And I took some pennies I had and I tried to do a reading. And of course, it made no sense to me. I was not in a place, the reading itself. I could see it was trying to tell me stuff, but it didn't. So I tried a few times, and is my nature, I hate to say that, but is my habit, when I didn't get immediate results that worked for me, I just lost interest, not in the I Ching, but in trying. It's kind of a pattern throughout my life. But it just kept calling me back. So over the years, I would pick something up in the bookstore. I worked in a bookstore for many years, so that made it even, they'd be staring at me on the shelf. And I'd try a few times here and there. And the same thing would happen. I just wouldn't get very far. So I would give up is basically what it was. I would give up too easily. We've had a lot of recent changes in our lives. We moved from the big city out into the woods and many other things. And I started feeling the tug again. And I'm like, this time, I've got the internet and I can do all kinds of studying. And I decided I wanted to study and take a deep dive if I'm going to do this, or I will just give up again. And of course, studying these days almost always starts on the internet. I actually ran into a couple of your articles, lots of YouTube videos, and decided, all right, I need to get some good study material and let's do this. And I ran into, I'm going to leave translation names out unless you get curious, but I ran into somebody did almost a textbook on it. That looked really interesting. And
I'm curious.
It was Benabel Wynn's book. And it got a bunch of good reviews, and I'm really interested in the history part and takes on Taoism and the connections to other things. So I ordered that. And while I was waiting for it is when I decided, let's just do this kind of general, how should I approach my I Ching use? And I had a paperback translation lying around, for lack of a better way to put it. And I did this reading. And I got, as you already know, I got 26, first line changing to 18. And from the translation that I have and my current level of experience, from 26, I got a definite calling to study up and to look at the history and all these things that I wanted to do anyway. So I'm like, yay, it's telling me to do what I'm doing anyway.
And you got to the moving line.
And then I got to the moving line, and here's the thing, in my opinion, my reaction to everything that happened next didn't do what it should have done at the time. I was seeing what I wanted to see, which was callings out to keep at it, repeat, and all that, keep renewing every day sort of things. And when I got to 18, and this is the reason I'm talking to you, it's one of the reasons, it's the big reason, because it shook me. I did not get a whole lot more to the message out of 18. I saw the days before and the days after as another calling out to keep repeat. Every time you finish, you got to start again. I didn't see the corruption. I didn't see the worms. I didn't see the translation I was using calls that the 18 disruption. Huh. Which
that's a bit, that seems a bit weak.
It's exactly the word I was going to use.
It's much yuckier than that, to be honest.
But I walked away from it perfectly happy because I didn't know I was missing anything. But in the spirit of continuing to study your podcast, I had the latest one in my thing and I went to listen to it. And it was the Family Constellations episode. And her first hexagram was 18.
Yeah.
And you dove into it. And I felt, I cannot even explain the almost dread that came over me. I felt like the kid walks into the classroom, you've done the homework and you look up on the board and the professor's done something completely different. And got to some of your answer might be right, but it's just, it's all wrong. And I felt briefly terrible. I'm like, I'm doing this wrong. There's something wrong with my translation, which I think there is, but not the translation's fault, but it's not right for me. And I started, okay, I heard you mention Wilhelm, so you're definitely using something that's Wilhelm-based. So I go online and I look at, oh, this matches with what they're talking about. And that led to, it's been about a week, and I've dived way deeper into both these hexagrams, but I just wanted to see your take on it, partially because I almost feel like part of the corruption hexagram 18 was calling out was my having the wrong translation for myself, the lack of preparation, and then listening to you is part of the fixing it. And it's just that whole cyclical meta self-referential.
Could be, yeah.
It really struck me as interesting. But yeah, now I'm looking at it like I'm a student. I'm allowed to make some mistakes. Study.
That's always fair. Yeah. If you come across someone who studied the I Ching so well that they know it all perfectly, run away.
Let you know.
Run away very fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And without knowing all that background, just that you'd been dabbling and wanted to dive.
Yeah.
I looked at this saying, you know, how should I approach my I Ching use? And you probably know by now the moving line is like the center of the reading, the most direct answer. How should you approach it? There's danger. Fruitful to stop. Yeah, now I am, of course, biased. I like people using the I Ching, and when someone wants to go deeper into it, I cheer and I want them to do more of it. There are people and situations where divination itself is a danger and it's fruitful to stop it. Yeah, I think when you get this line, you look at the 26 and the great taming, great tending, and you look at the 18 and try to diagnose your own corruption, and dig in and see, have a good look at all the worms. And I think you need to get a clear idea of the nature of that danger that needs stopping and why. And then, I think at the end of all that, then you can see how your I Ching use fits in with all that or doesn't, as the case may be. In other words, I can't say from this end of the reading, oh, this is saying you should do this and that.
And I could come up with a list of things that easily could be that corruption and that danger, because there's tons of them. One of them being my tendency to rush in and hope I get it right, and lose interest if I don't. And but there's also a tendency with anything divination to try to swing things the way you want to see them. And which I believe I exactly did reading these. So
this is all getting very meta.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, I'm a very meta person. I have all kinds of feedback loops going on in my head all the time. It's just the way. And
yeah.
When
you were talking to start with about having a sort of lifelong habit of starting things and finding them hard and dropping them again, I thought, well, that sounds a bit 18-y.
Quite possibly.
You said, it's a habit, you keep doing it, it keeps having the same results.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's start with 26 and look at 18 again, and then we'll have a context, a sort of framework in which to come back to there's danger, fruitful to stop it. And we need to keep remembering that, because it's the most important and most direct bit as we go through.
And I also believe that the translation I was looking at originally was not worded that poignantly. I think all the language in that translation is a little softened. I don't know if I should mention it or not, because again, I don't know that it's a well-known little paperback one, but I don't know. It might be okay for someone else, but I might need a little bit more harshly worded.
The key is to get a real translation. And there is danger, fruitful to stop, is pretty much exactly what that line says in so many words. And you'll get a few variations on that. But yeah, it's not a line where there's much scope, much ambiguity, I think. People do think they should modernize the I Ching, and they should make it easier and simpler and or more positive. And to my mind, this is all.
It's been around a long time. Why should we?
Yeah, it's managed okay without our help in that regard so far. We should probably leave it alone as much as we can. Okay, so hexagram 26. Yeah. Having said that, my translation calls it great taming, and I'm starting to think that's wrong or not quite it. What it's doing is domesticating in one of the earliest meanings. It's nourishing and tending and nurturing and raising, and the very oldest meaning seems to be rearing and feeding animals.
Okay.
So, and this hexagram is doing that in a great way, in a big way, rearing big animals. As if you look through the rest of the lines, you find it's rearing horses and pigs and bullocks. So it's not just a small holding with a few chickens. You'll also find it translated as great restraint. I think the idea is less hammering fierce control onto something and more containing it.
Okay.
So that you can make full present use of it. You know where your bullocks are and what you're doing with them.
Yep.
Yeah. It's definitely a good hexagram for mastering a skill. It has this sense of the expression being on top of something. Yeah.
I was just thinking because it's almost, I have this dabbling and giving up pattern, and now all of a sudden I want to dive in all at once. And that's probably not the best approach to getting in deeply. I might need to restrain myself a little bit. It's almost absolutely me that needs to be restrained here. So
could be. That makes sense. And if you look at the trigram picture this paints, do you know what I mean by trigrams?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant.
I've studied enough to know that.
Doesn't matter if people haven't.
Yeah. But like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and on the inside here, you have Chen, heaven, full of creative energy. And on the outside is mountain. Mountain on the outside is like a lid. It encloses a space. It makes a container where things are safe and can be nourished and nurtured like they are in this one. And yeah, it's very solid and defined and doesn't get pushed about. And yeah, that gives me that sense of being on top of things. There's all this creative energy and drive on the inside, and the mountain that sits and contains it and isn't going anywhere.
Nice for it, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Another thing to say about 26 in general, maybe, is how it's not 25.
Okay.
It's the paired hexagram with that one. If you turn it upside down, you find you're looking at hexagram 25, which is without entanglement. And so on the one hand, it's this, not that. And on the other hand, it follows from that.
Right.
And the sequence just says that being without entanglement, hence capable of tending, and so great tending follows. And I think this is saying it's a prerequisite that you need to disconnect from the things that are not yours, disentangle from the things you want to worry about or get ahead of or fix or regret or feel responsible for that are not actually yours.
So you've known me for what, 30, 40 years now? Oh, right. Goodness.
Okay, about 15 minutes now. But the
I know. But
we have known you for a wee bit longer.
It's known me for a lot longer. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And hexagram 25 in broad terms says, that lot's not mine. And hexagram 26 says, ah, this is mine. These fields, these animals, this energy that I want to look after and nourish and build up and make of service. You nod as if this makes some sense.
I'm actually equating it. The question was about I Ching use, but there are parallels to other things that are going on personally that I'm, and there may be a little bit of, is your attention pointing in the right direction? Nudges in here too. So that gives me something to think on.
Yeah. And how do I approach the I Ching? It's a bit like, I don't know, I have this car and how do I approach driving it? It's more, where are you going to drive it? And that's in many ways a terrible analogy, but I was just...
It worked. My head took it, so...
Okay.
The head, the heart will follow.
Well, it's also more like meeting a person than having a thing to use.
Yeah.
But yeah. Just saying, it doesn't exist in a box as a sort of thing you go and do separately from the rest of your life.
Right.
The oracle, or judgment as Wilhelm would call it, for hexagram 26 says, great tending, constancy bears fruit, not eating at home is good fortune, and it's fruitful to cross the great river. Constancy is fruitful, being steady and persistent and holding fast, rather like that mountain, and then not eating at home is good fortune.
And you know, I took that. As, which is before I did some reading about some of the interpretations of that. My first take on it was because of how I'm bubbled up, especially since the pandemic. I work from home. I go out for going and getting stuff, but certainly other than close friends, not a lot of interaction and socializing in person. And I took it as reaching outside of my bubble comfort zone. If I'm going to learn, go to some others. And I saw a translation later that it was related to the military and not taking food from the people you're protecting, but it was like more of a historical thought. And that didn't change anything from what I first got. So I went with that, but knowing me, there's probably more to it.
Yeah, so. I'm actually really glad you had a chance to just look at it and respond and recognize things in it yourself before you started reading all the stuff. And there is always more stuff to read. But yeah, it's talking to you. So your response, your feeling of get out of the bubble, I think is good. There's also a tradition that says it was about going to work at the court as opposed to staying home.
Okay.
And I have seen people suggest that if you're rearing great animals, they are not just for your own dinner table. They are to be sacrificed to the ancestors. Set aside for that. All of which, I think, adds to that same sense that what you're tending and growing here is meant to take you outside the familiar. So you're not eating the same meal every day or the same intellectual and social meal every day, but you are let out. And then, of course, the next thing it says is it's good to cross the great river. Go against the current and
I will tell you, that hit my head in a way I'm like, what is that really? I'm from the Detroit area originally, so I picture the Detroit River, and you can look across to the other side and see Windsor in it. So it didn't conjure up an image of, it was a travel image originally, and I knew it was wrong. And it was literally one of your blog entries that called you out to picture what it's like to cross a great river and fight the current and all that. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is the work. This is the difficult. Put the work in, but it will be beneficial to actually do it and get to the other.
Yes.
Even though it's hard. And
you have to think that the sort of normal, sensible thing to do would be to stay on this bank of the river and keep your feet dry. So when it says it's fruitful to cross, there must be something really worthwhile over there. Yeah. And then there's the image of 26, which talks about that trigram picture with heaven under the mountain. And there are lots of ways of trying to imagine that one. doesn't make a picture as obviously as some of them do. I think it was Margaret Pearson who imagined being up the mountain and being able to look down over the clouds. They're below the summit. I like that. I can imagine that the ongoing power of heaven is contained in the mountain, like seeing rock strata in the rock face. These are like the continuous lines of time laid down, as it were. And then also people have been known to store their libraries in caves in mountains. So I think all
interesting.
Of
yeah,
any or all of that, play with the images and see what grabs you. Inwardly, there is all this great energy and creative spirit and sense of what is unchanging and unlimited. And then outwardly, there's the mountain that just sits and anchors and contains that. Heaven dwells in the center of the mountain, Great Ten. A noble one uses the many annals of ancient words and past deeds and tends to his character. That's the same word again, the name of the hexagram. Tending, nurturing, domesticating your own character or virtue or power, your own capacity. So as an answer to how to approach the Yi Jing, it really jumps out clearly, doesn't it?
Yeah. And part of my intent at the time was definitely some of that, because it's on the studying side and the history, which I've started doing. Some of the history is a little blurry because it goes back so far.
Yeah.
But the history and the philosophies that have influenced it over the years and all that is certainly going to be part of this. But there's probably also some deeper inward looking that is part of the studying. But definitely those who have gone before and know some stuff, I can't just skip over them.
Absolutely. And there's the idea that by doing this, you are nurturing your own capacity. Yeah. So that's hexagram 26. That's what you're setting out to do. That's kind of what it's about. But then in the background is 18.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is not just disruption, but there are... oh, there are poisonous worms in the bottom of the pot, and there are angry ancestors and curses and dark magic and all that exciting stuff. You know, I was saying 26 is not 25. This is not 17.
Okay.
And it's especially not that, because it's not only the upside down version, it's also the opposite version of it if you changed every line.
Oh, gotcha.
So it there is really... Yeah, that's really a strong contrast with this one. And 17 is following, and it has this sense of, going along with the flow of things, really experiencing there is a flow of things, and it carries you, and you can go with it, and the synchronicities will guide you, and you perhaps follow your desires, and you obey the nature of things, and none of this is wrong, and it all carries you where you're meant to be. And then you get hexagram 18, which is very much not that.
Yeah.
Following people with joy means there are things to be done. And so corruption follows. Corruption means things to be done. 17, go with the flow. No need to ask questions about it. What you need comes when it's meant to. 18 is different. 18, you need to look at that ongoing flow and ask questions about it and do some digging.
Yeah.
Say, which ancestor have I neglected? Or, just where is this coming from?
Right.
What is this? It's a really tricky hexagram to talk about for another person because...
Yeah. You don't know everything and you don't know all the history or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly.
But it's definitely, I'm sitting here going, gosh, I wish I had gotten 17 because that, I have this.
Oh, yes.
As I mentioned earlier, this tendency to, so certain things in life come very easy to me. I have a sharp just understanding or whatever. And I go in and people go, oh, you're so smart. You're so smart. But the downside of that is anything that doesn't do that, I give up really easily. And which is part of what this is about, because I keep getting called. And it's, if you're going to do this, you're going to have to put in some work. And this is a little bit against the way I, my nature. It's, I put in the work if I'm already, if I, my success is already assured, I think. And when I can't see that, I have this tendency to find reasons to wander off into the woods or whatever. And I, there's probably a lot more to 18 than that corrupt part of myself. But there's, I've had, like I said, 40 years of dancing back and forth with even using the I Ching. And all of a sudden I'm like, I want to dive in. I got to fix something.
Sometimes people get 17 and are not remotely pleased because it is saying all things are fine and all things in good time. And yeah, but I'd quite like it to have happened last week. 18 has, you look at the stuff about dark magic and ancestral curses and venomous insects and all the rest, but then you get to the actual oracle. Corruption, creating success from the source, it's fruitful to cross the great river. Before the seed day, 3 days. After the seed day, 3 days. So there is all the yuck factor, but there's also the, aha, now is the time that something can be done about this. The direction can be changed. You can go against the current and across the river. You can create success from the source. You can get involved in a positive way, and your efforts are well received by the universe at large, and things work. And I suppose you can imagine that an old pattern is back on the old bank of the river, and there is a whole new country on the other side. And then you just need the 3 days before and after that beginning, which I'm tending to think now of in terms of needing time to prepare and think about it and time to establish the new. Anytime one changes a habit, overcomes a pattern, reconciles with an ancestor, whatever, this doesn't happen like flicking a switch.
And habit-wise, even, I look now after about a week and reading other material and talking to you, in terms of the habit, I take it as my desire was, now I have to do the deep dive. And I keep using that word, dive. And dive is very fast and very sudden and very enveloping. And I probably need to learn how to slow down and learn a little and build up the knowledge. It's funny, build up is what the translation I was using called 26.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very good thing to call it. Yeah.
Slowly build up the knowledge, and that'll get me my footing. Ancestor-wise, I can think immediately. Both my parents and my older brother are now all gone, and I think about them and my relationships with them quite a bit, and some of them coming back. But anything before that, I'm pretty clueless. I knew my grandparents when I was very young, and then historically, I don't know a lot, but...
We inherit these things through our immediate family.
But yeah,
including,
and I definitely
this
know
thing
what...
about, oh, you're the clever one, so you should get it all at once.
And yeah.
Yeah. And if you don't, you're not,
there's
not
some,
that one at all.
Exactly. There's some self-beliefs in there that happened from some of those relationships that may not actually necessarily be true about myself. I need to squash those.
Or stir them up a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the trigram picture here, you've still got the mountain sitting solidly on the outside, and below it is the wind rousing and stirring. And the noble one rouses the people to nourish character. There's that character again.
Dear. Yeah.
Yeah. Nourishing and educating it here. So I think it's rousing and stirring up. And stimulating growth and change, I suppose, not just saying that's how it is.
Right.
Yeah. So the mountain sits there and contains this and creates a safe space for it. At 26, it contains energy, and here it maybe shapes the growth. So you asked how to approach I Ching use, and maybe the I Ching use itself could be a way to engage with corruption, to cross rivers and find new territory. And I ask questions like, why does this happen? Why did I do that? Or how can I change this? Or just what to be aware of as I go into this.
You just triggered something in my brain. Mm. It's the kinds of questions that I'm going to be asking need to be, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word, a little more fearless. I already know I'm not going to use the I Ching to ask how's things going to go at work next week. You can do stuff like that for practice, but that if I'm going to do this, I'm going to be doing a lot of self-introspection and why am I like this? What should I do to change this? And I, as you said that, it hit me as I really need to ask some tough questions, or at least work toward being able to ask those tough questions and see what I get.
Yeah, I did preface all that with a maybe.
Yeah, I know, but it just it flicked at something in my head. So
it landed.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing I would say is that there can be corruption in the way one does readings. Mm-hmm. Readings can be a way of perpetuating.
That brings up an interesting thought, because I've been thinking about that, because I have the entirety of the time, which, like I said, has been on and off, that I've approached I Ching, I've used the coins method. And every time I look at the arrow method, I get mathematically confused or something. There's this part of me that wonders, is coins too simplistic? Part of the arrow stock method I see is just spending the time to get yourself into the right space might be beneficial with the coins.
It is worth a try. I mean, some people swear by it and would not feel as if they were talking to the oracle at all unless they had spent their 15 minutes counting stalks. I'm not one of them, actually. By the time I've spent that long counting and wondering if I miscounted and so on, I've lost focus.
Okay. But it was one of the thoughts. I certainly probably should give it a try and see.
Yeah, absolutely give it a try. And just for the sound and smell of yarrow stalks.
Okay.
They have this particular sort of whispering, chiming sound they make as you shuffle them. And I don't know, that it's just the fact that that has been the same ever since people first consulted this. And the actual method we have of counting them has not been around for all that long. But the counting and dividing of yarrow stalks, the tactile, the sensory experience, that goes back and that connects you. Anyway, moving line. There is danger. Fruitful to stop. Very first line of hexagram 26. So it's like the prerequisite. Before you start tending and nurturing anything, better make sure you're not nurturing and nourishing that. And for what that is, I think this is where you have to think about hexagram 18 and patterns that you don't want to perpetuate. Also, I think it's the intersection of 26 and 18, and both of them are very much about saying, okay, this is mine to sort out. Mine to nourish in 26, mine to sort out in 18. 18 definitely doesn't say, well, it's always been like that. My family have always been like that. It's probably my mother's fault. that's just how it is.
Yeah.
And 26 doesn't say, whatever. Let them wander off into the field and they'll either grow or they'll get eaten by a wolf and we'll see. So it's very much, this is mine. This is for me to look after. And stop whatever is perilous. And hexagram 18 has that great sense of something that is going on, the recurring pattern or the infection where the pain comes and goes, but the underlying infection is always there, or the family pattern that the previous generation did and so did the one before that, or the personal habit that keeps me going back to the sweet stuff anytime there is any, or whatever.
A lot of those kinds of things,
here I am in the kitchen and I seem to have eaten that again. How did that happen kind of thing.
There's a lot of loops in our lives that don't need to be.
Yeah, and we don't know they're there or they're happening until you get the 18 moment, which is, okay, now you can wake up and actually see it and maybe do something else. And Yeah, so what is it? There are ways that using the I Ching can have that kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm just going to tell you about some that I've seen.
Okay.
Yeah, so that you can have your eyes open for them. There's asking addictively. You ask this, and you don't quite understand the answer, so you ask again. And you're still not quite sure, so you ask what it meant by the one before.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to avoid, because if I don't get the answer, or if I don't understand the answer right away, there's definitely a tug to, maybe I should ask a clarifying question.
Yeah.
And maybe I know
sometimes
I'm just,
you should ask a clarifying question.
But I don't want to confuse myself by throwing so many out there. Now I've got 8 answers to figure out rather than one.
Yes. And you spent 3 minutes on each of them.
Yeah.
There's also asking addictively because you want to be really sure before you go and do the thing. It most often happens to people who are caught up in relationship things. And the question will be something like, how does he feel about me? Because if I just knew that, then I could be sure. And then I'd know I was safe.
Yes. Yeah. And I have no plans to ask those kinds of questions, because I have a weird thought on this kind of thing, because I see it in other divination too. How does he feel about me? And my answer is, how somebody feels about me isn't my business. Why am I asking?
Yeah. 25. Disentangle. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. It's like, ask how do I feel about them? There's where it might get really interesting.
It might. might. Yes.
So, anyway.
Mind you, there are other ways of doing that which are less obvious, especially when I'm doing them myself. All manner of questions that are designed to see whether I could have that before I start asking about how I can get that, just so I feel safer. There's a lot of asking as avoidance. I could think about this, I could research it, but I could just ask the oracle. I could go and talk to the person and I could listen to them, but I could ask the oracle instead, and that will be easier and safer and won't be embarrassing. And yeah, I could face up to this, I could go and see a doctor about this, or go and see a lawyer, or whatever it is. I do what I need to get a definite answer so I know what I really have to work on. I could just ask the oracle and then I can sit and do some interpretation. There are a whole range of avoidant kind of ducking out of interacting with the real world in any depth ways that we can use oracles. And sometimes it's easy to see when you're doing it, and sometimes it isn't, speaking from personal experience. Sometimes there is danger, and it's fruitful to stop doing readings and go engage with the real world instead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And especially since in the back of my mind, I bring it up again, I keep saying, this time I want to take a deep dive, and this thought that I'm just going to plunge in all at once, I may be very well being called, no. You know, the studying, sure, because I'm actually enjoying what I've started to read, because there's history and stuff. As is normal for me, names are going in one side of my head and out the other, because people's names don't stick and dates are pretty blurry, but I'm still getting a feeling for the order of events and some dives more into the philosophy. And that's been very enjoyable. And I have not cast a single reading since I did this one, because I really felt like this is, understand. You're not going to understand more by just doing this again. It's just part of why I reached out to you. It's, I need to talk to folks who've got some experience. And so I'm not saying I'm not going to come up with a question and try it, but I'm concentrating
absolutely
on the, let's keep learning. You don't know a whole bunch just because you watched whatever, a bunch of YouTube videos or whatever. Keep learning.
The only way to learn this thing is to do readings.
But then you got to do them. Yeah.
Yeah. Have the conversations with the book. Yeah. So what are you taking away from this? Your sense of the danger that you're stopping? I mean, you might or might not want to share that, you know.
I'm right now I'm taking away needing to think on that some. The obvious stuff right on the top is this tendency, this all or nothing way of approaching a lot of things. But there is, so you brought up some of the ideas of just asking that I haven't had that happen really badly playing around with other tools along the years, but there were a couple times where it's just, that wasn't quite what I wanted to hear. So I'm going to reword the question.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's a good one.
And so there's, but there is that underlying of, I need to be really careful not to see what I want to see, because what I want to see is pretty shiny and easy and happy and peaceful and everybody gets along and all that kind of stuff, because that would be great. But there may be some other things too. Just there's personal things in my life. A big one, like recently in the past few years, I did some major health changes in that I was very heavy and had very high blood sugar. And over the course of some dieting and other things, I actually got to the point where that's under control without medication.
Oh, well,
and it's very nice.
Fantastic.
But I'm still big and it's things. Some things are difficult and stuff. And I've been languishing. And it's, I really need to get, all right, I did that, but now I need to continue. And I have this tendency, I got over the big hump, so I'm just going to stay where I am. And if you apply that to things like doing the I Ching, it could be dangerous too. You could get to a point where you're just, you're not really doing anything anymore, even though you think you are.
Yeah.
And those sorts of patterns, it's definitely going to be about patterns and habits.
Yes.
Recognizing the patterns and habits, because I certainly have plenty of them.
Yeah,
in my life.
Pretty much exactly what I...
There's many I've given up over time. Years ago, I haven't drank this century because I used to drink pretty heavily. So I know how to approach those things when I recognize them, for lack of a better way to put it, but you got to recognize
them. Yeah.
So,
yes.
And I think this is a calling out to recognize a few more maybe.
Yeah. So on the one hand, there's the don't let the divination itself become corrupt.
Exactly.
But also the divination is potentially a way to learn and cultivate is a good word for 26 and develop the awareness of any of those unexamined patterns, any of those moment.
I from this conversation I'm getting a calling out to do certain kinds of work on myself or with myself, for lack of a better way to put it. And that the I Ching can probably help me with that, but I also need to do some to be able to use the I Ching. It's time for some just introspection, not just because it's good for you, but because it's good for what I want to try here. You
know? Yeah.
And
because it's good for crossing rivers and not even
home
and getting out of the bubble and
all that. Yeah. And there is such a thing as too much introspection, but I know.
Oh, yes.
Currently not guilty of it, but I can go there, so I have to be aware of that too. It's really easy.
Oh God, hexagram 18 is fun, isn't it?
Yeah. It's way more quote fun unquote than I realized it was when I first saw it, and then later that night heard you talking about it, and went, oh my gosh.
But as I say, it is also an encouraging hexagram in its own way. Yeah. It's not there is corruption and you are doomed to get eaten by.
Yeah, there is much to do, it is telling.
Precisely. And now is a really good time. I think I have run out of things to say about the reading.
I appreciate you bringing
it. It's a very interesting one.
I really appreciate you taking the time and talking to me about it. Like I said, I felt like I walked in the room and the professor had done a completely different problem on the board. You were the professor in that case, so thank you for being a teacher. Because it was your podcast, but thank you for being a professor, because I need to be seeking out those professors in this process, whether you think of yourself that highly or not.
Really not.
Happy to be over here saying you're a teacher. So teachers are good. Doesn't mean I don't think teachers know everything. I know they know more than me. And that's
all they need to do.
Sometimes that's all I need. Yeah. So thank you very much.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that was our conversation. I hope you enjoyed it. You might have noticed I talked about quite a few potential dangers with readings that almost certainly weren't in the least relevant to Nathaniel. But I left all that part in anyway, in the hope it can still be helpful to someone who hears this. And if you do find this podcast helpful, then please could you leave it a nice rating or review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to it? I would really appreciate that. Thank you for listening. Take good care and I'll be back next month.